On the face of it, Perth has always seemed like a respectable, middle-class city where people love the beaches, the Sunday sessions and the cover bands. But scratch away a little bit and you'll find an underbelly of great punk music. Originating in the 1970s, Perth has influenced and been influenced by others and has chucked out some of the greatest punk tunes and punk bands. My name is David Reddin. I present the punk rock show Burn the Airwaves on RTRFM from Western Australia. This podcast series charts the history of punk music in Perth and WA from the mid-70s until now. I'll be talking to the bands, the fans, the promoters and the DJs that have shaped the scene. This is Punk West.
I always, especially used to, you know, in the homicide days and that, I always feel sorry for the people who'd have to use the microphone after me, you know? The spit and the sweat and the fucking bullshit.
Donnie Ratt was a member of Perth punk band The Rats, The Homicides and Raw Nerve, and he now fronts Sick Pose. His first record that he bought was Sex Pistols' Nevermind the Bollocks, and he was there as a young lad when The Clash played at the Perth Entertainment Centre in 1982. Donnie doesn't enjoy being interviewed, so I'm very grateful that he did this one. He invited me to his place, and he speaks his mind all the time. So, Donnie, tell us about music when you was young, when you was at home. Like your parents, did they play any music?
Yeah, I grew up in a house which had plenty, starting with probably Disney records. I used to always dug the part in Fantasia where the witch comes out and it's like, wah! And just that experience of sound was my first memory. I grew up in a house with Sweet and Susie Quattro, AC/DC, Neil Diamond, Brian Ferry and Roxy Music, that kind of stuff, and Slade as well. So the jump to punk wasn't a big thing, you know?
Mm. Yeah, so that glam rock stuff. So was that your parents or was that older
that
brothers?
That was mum mainly. Mum's an old rocker, you know, like was an old rocker back in Scotland. You know, the on the bikes, greasers or whatever they call them. Mm-hmm. She was one of those. Mm-hmm. Dad was an Edwardian, so he was more into Roy Orbison and the Everly Brothers. So there was that in his house. You know, Mum and Dad separated when I was really, really young, so there was two different houses. And Dad was that kind of stuff, and Mum was glam rock. He was an Edwardian, you know, before the Teds. He had the suit, the winkle pickers, and the drape coat. Yeah, sure, but it wasn't a comic book style.
Is that how they met then? Through a love of music? If they're both.
I don't think so. I'm not even sure. I mean, they're from two very disparate kind of subcultures, though. Well, not so much. They're both rock and roll based at the time. Mum hated the fucking Beatles, I know that.
So what about music for you then, Donnie? So we got the very early stuff. How did you... It's not, like you say, it's not much of a progression from, like, the glam rock.
It was always in the house and the kind of heavier stuff and catchy stuff. Initially, punk was just, you know, apart from the few bands who were doing it properly, like the Banshees and so forth, you know, it was just fucking pop music, wasn't it?
Was there a punk moment for you? Was there one song you heard or anything like that? Can you remember?
What I heard first, before I got my first punk record, which was Bollocks, I mean, I think everyone just somehow, that's their first punk record, you know? And I like Bollocks, you know, I was fucking, wow, this is great. But it was just pop music. Like the first two songs on that album, kind of genre-defying, Bodies and Holidays in the Sun. The rest of the album, average pop music, really. But I was already into like Blondie and Ian Dury and stuff like that. So when I first got my first punk record, you know, so it wasn't, again, not a great leap. And of course, the Pistols led to the Clash, and the Clash were way more important to me than the Pistols, you know. That's, you know, their first album, genre-defying. But it wasn't till the Dead Kennedys, until I was already listening to the stuff, but my first couple of Dead Kennedys records are what made me punk, per se. That and Black Flag and Plasmatics. And then when the 82 stuff started coming in, you know, like all the English stuff and the Oi stuff, that was when my path was confirmed, so to speak. You know, I identified with it immediately. It told me exactly what I already thought, you know, and confirmed what I already thought. Punk was an education. You know, it wasn't pop music, man.
So where did you get your music from? Was there a record shop that you...
Yeah, there was Dada's. Where'd you go? I've been going to Dada's for like 40-odd years now, man. And since I was like 11 or 12. There was 78s, of course. There was White Rider Records. A bit later, there was House of Wax. There was Monkey Music. Yeah, Perth had plenty of places. Back then, if that's what we're talking about, all this was new. You know, a new Dead Kennedys record. A new Vice Squad record or a new Plasmatics record.
So did you, how did you find out about the music? Did you actually go to the record shop, get them to play those tunes, or did you hear it on the radio or magazines?
I don't even know, man. I suppose you saw some of it in NME, but it was more a matter of just recognition. You know, you're flipping through the racks and you know you're going to like that record. You know, you see a Discharge record for the first time, you go, yeah, fuck, I'm buying it. You know, of course you are. You know, or a Plasmatics record, you know, you've got to take that home. A lot of it was that, of course, and then, like it always has been, it becomes, you know, references, you know, liner notes and so forth. You go, oh, right, I better check that out. Oh, I might check that out. You know, and the more you know, the more you know, the more you discover, the more you discover. And then, you know, English punk becomes whatever, and so you go to Swedish punk, and you go to Japanese punk, and Euro punk, and wherever the fuck you want to go. You know, people always go, I get introduced to people regularly. They go, oh, you like this dude. He's into punk. Okay, what, he's into punk? What does that mean? Mention something like Mob 47 to them, who are way better known now than they were then. They don't have a fucking clue what you're talking about. So, are you into punk? Are you? Are you really? You haven't got past your Stranglers records, have ya? You know, that kind of fucking person. And good luck to them, you know. I'm a snob. Ah, punk? What the fuck is that? Folk punk? Come on, man. Everyone nowadays just fucking labels their band. Aware this punk, grunge punk, punk, whatever the fuck you want to call it. Which it actually has nothing to do with the premise or the genre or the ideals, you know? Or even the sound. It seems to be the more than ever the flavour of the month as a convenient term of reference which means absolutely fuck all. Yeah, we're a punk band. Good for you. We Sick Pose did that song on our first release called Punk Band. Very reason, you know. We are a punk band. We are a punk band. Simply to take the piss. I got into bollocks when I was 11. And by 12 years old, I was into it. So that would have been like 1980 and 81. And I was a kid, you know. So we'd go into the city and hang out a bit. And there was heaps of skinheads around. There was punks around. It was the subcultures of the day. You know, we were very Anglo-centric back then. Our subculture was, you know, Anglophile. Now it's all American and has been for a very long time. So, you know, you had your mods and your punks and your fucking skins and your fucking rockers and your surfies and very tribal. But I was a kid when for the first few years I was a kid and I'd only hang out in Perth. I started going to the odd gig when I was like 13, 14. Started going to the nightclubs where the skinheads would hang out and so forth, the Underground and Red Lion. The only two nightclubs that would let skinheads in. This is back in the day where they had signs at the front of pubs and nightclubs saying anyone wearing Dr. Martin boots or Ripple Soled DBs will not be allowed entry into this venue.
Was there much tension there amongst the sort of those genres of skinheads and the punks?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a violent time.
Yeah, absolutely. Each subculture was basically obligated to punch on with each other at first sight.
So did you put yourself in any particular... It sounds as though you didn't put yourself in any particular crowd. You were just...
No.
You were just there.
No, I've never...
So you were friends with...
Well, I was friends with everybody, like I still am, you know. I moved around a lot, you know. I got to know lots of different people and lots of different subcultures, especially because Mum was in Armidale. That's where I was lived. And I went to Armidale fucking high school as a little punk skinhead kid. I mean, fuck off. Back in those days, that's mental. And Dad was in Frio. So weekends I'd spend in Frio, which was also a very anti-punk and skinhead area. Weeks I'd be in Armidale, which was, you know, daily mental and physical combat. Good fun, though. I used to enjoy it because I knew exactly my place in the world, you know. I don't fit in. That's fine. You don't have to keep reminding me. I'm already aware of this. This is something you're only, you know, perpetuating because you're expected to. But you don't have to with me. I'm all right with it. It's cool. I'm not like you, motherfucker. I know this already. I've known it for a very long time. I hung out a little bit, man, but not... I knew a few of the faces and stuff, but I was a kid half the time. And then by the time I was 16, I'd fucked off to New South Wales and Sydney. And that was a very different life, you know. That was a life of living on the streets and crime and shit. So I didn't have much time for music for a few years or subcultures.
So before you left, were there any punk bands, Perth punk bands, that you used to go and see?
Mob Vengeance were great. Like Mob Vengeance, yeah.
So when did you come back to Perth?
How long? I got extradited back to Perth by the New South Wales courts in about 2 years later. It's a long story. Nah, it's not worth telling. I might incriminate myself even further. Yeah, another time maybe.
So how long did it take before you thought, I've got to be in a band now?
I never thought to be in a band. I always thought it was a bit silly to be in a band. You know, I fucking love music and I fucking love all of it. I just thought, grown man on stage jumping about. It's a bit fucking silly. So not for me. Me and my mate Fitzy started a band in like 82, but it was just him and me, you know. We're inspired by those crass bullshit detector records with all the homemade recordings and stuff on it. And we thought, we can do that. So we got this thing together called Dead Budgie, and we just swapped guitar and drums all the time, you know. Yeah, that was the first thing I ever did.
And your recordings of that?
We made a tape, you know, just made a tape, lent it to girls we were hanging out with at the time. They said, oh, can we take this to school? And they took it to school, and that was the last time we ever saw the tape.
So if there's any women listening to this, we've got Dead Budgie recordings, get in touch with us, and we'd like it back. Yeah. That would be nice. Mm. So how did it progress from there then, Donny?
I got back to Perth and I ended up back on the street. I was fucked in the head. You know, I was mental and I wasn't well. And ended up back on the street around Fremantle for a couple of years. Somehow or other, I got my act together and got myself a lady and got myself a house and got something akin to normal, you know, like whatever that is. And I started picking up the guitar, you know. I had a guitar, so I started picking it up and I started playing with the amps and I started doing this and I started writing stuff. And then someone asked me, you can play rhythm? And I went, yeah, I can play rhythm. Next thing you know, I'm in a fucking band. And that was it. And then the singer quit, I think. Yeah, I think the singer quit. And then they says, well, can you sing and play at the same time? And I says, oh, give it a go. It turns out I could. And that's where it took off. Yeah, that was Sub Rosa, which evolved into The Rats, which evolved into everything else that followed. You know, it just happened. Mm. And I'm still surprised nowadays that it's like I even fucking bothered.
Are you surprised that people still like listen to your music now and interested? Or do you think, no, that music there, listening to The Rats or The Homicides now, that still sounds good?
I'm not surprised. I'm not encouraged or anything by it either, or hats on the back. Well done, son. None of that either. I get asked more about The Rats now than I did then, which is, it's a good thing. Of course it is, you know. It's a legacy, and I'm aware of that, and I'm okay with that. It's cool. I dig bands too. I'm a fan, number one. So, yeah, I get asked more about The Rats now. The Rats are more popular probably than they fucking were back then. Get asked about The Homicides. I still get offers every year to reunion with either The Rats, which is never going to happen, or The Homicides, which is never going to fucking happen. What does kind of twist my head a bit is play a gig and there's people in the crowd who weren't even alive when you first started doing gigs, you know. And that's a weird one to get your head around at 53 years of age, you know. Half time I play, I have nothing but contempt for the audience. I'm trying to get that across to them. Don't get me wrong, I'm glad they're there. See, it's this weird contradictory thing. I'm glad you're there, you know, I really am. And I'm glad you dig it too. Just leave me the fuck alone.
Don't interview me. I don't want to be interviewed. That makes sense.
Or something like that. Yeah. The only time I feel and when the head stops ticking and is when I'm on stage. Only time it stops and I can focus and I can relax. It's the only time I can truly relax is when I'm with a microphone in my face. The real world's too difficult, man. Too scary. Too annoying. Too intrusive.
So, Donnie, early days of the Rats. Did you say Sub Rosa?
Sub Rosa, yeah.
Sub Rosa, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So they morphed into the Rats, did they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. There's two members there. Sub Rosa had lots of different members, and I think two members, myself included, ended up in the Rats. So morph.
So who was in the Rats when you first?
The Rats was me, Matt Vigilante on bass, and Frankie Doyle on drums. Frankie and me were together for like 18 years.
Where did you used to play first few gigs?
Everywhere. You name it, we fucking played it. You know, sometimes the Rats were playing three gigs a weekend. But back then, this is like the early mid-90s. Mid-90s. There was, Perth was pumping, man. There was gigs everywhere. There was venues everywhere. It wasn't hard to get gigs. We used to play Fremantle a lot. Like, we opened up a couple of places in Freo, like Coakley's and Seaview, which people had kind of ignored for years, you know. But because we're from Freo, we thought, well, you know, let's fucking book close to home. The Rats ended up getting banned from playing anywhere south of the river, in fact. Us and the Pimps. Because we used to play the Seaview and coppers would turn up every gig, you know. And we'd be loading in and the cops would turn and say, oh, you're playing tonight. And I'd say, yeah, we're playing tonight. And the cops would go, we'll see you later. I'd say, okay, we'll see you later. And they'd come and they'd cause shit and they'd arrest people. And our gigs would get closed down. But we only lived up the road. So we'd just grab 30 or 40 people from the gig and we'd go back to my place and we'd have the gig there. More fun than the pub even. But after a fight one night out the front of Coakley's, the council and the Fremantle Accord, it was called, says, that's it, you cunts are done. And they banned us from playing anywhere south of the river. Then we headed to the city more, found the Hyde Park Hotel, where it seemed we were playing every weekend for like 2 or 3 years, man. I'm sure it wasn't, but it seemed that way. And those gigs were mental. I always say to people, you know, I'm a snob. I always say to people, I go, oh, the fucking Hardy, those days, you know, they were great. But they're talking about the 2000s. It's like, no, you should have tried the 90s, man. That's when the Hardy was really the madhouse that it was made out to be. I mean, the 2000s were all right too. Some of those Homicides gigs were fucking mental. Like, they pulled the lights down one night at a Homicides gig. We were playing the Pool Room. Hunters pulled all the lights down from the ceiling. Have you heard that one before? And they pulled all the lights down from the ceiling, plunging the whole place into pitch black. This is during our first song. So there's all these exposed wires going ping, 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 just above the heads of the fucking punters, you know. One touch and someone's dead. Next thing you know, someone hits our bass player. So, yeah, it's fucking on. We're fighting the crowd and they're fighting us and some people are fighting the crowd with us. And I hear behind me someone going, psst, Donnie. And I turn around and it's the manager of the pub saying, could you, I know it's pitch black, man, could you finish the set though, just to calm things down? And we finished the set in total pitch blackness. That was a fucking good gig, man. You know, fun gig. And, you know, fighting the crowd. I mean, the Homicides did that all the time. What's the fucking difference, you know?
What are the bands played around that time?
Magoos were always great, man. I love the Magoos. Yeah, Magoos is the best Perth punk band ever.
I've heard a lot of Magoos. I think it was Claire Hodgson when I interviewed her. She said she loved the Magoos.
Yeah, Magoos is something else, man. Good friends, good brothers.
Were you around at the time of PC Thug?
Yeah, we played with them heaps. Yeah,
played with them.
Good guys too. Totally different genre, but that's one of the reasons the Rats play so many gigs is because we'd play with everybody and anybody. You know, we didn't just want to stay playing the same punk gig to the same 20 people every fucking 2 months, you know. We went out there and just booked and booked and booked.
So you didn't necessarily play with a punk band. You'd play with anybody who was a good band. You just didn't care.
Not good or not, you know. If we're booked, we'll play it regardless. I don't care who we're playing with. But of course, we played heaps of punk bands and bands like PC Thug, you know, and they were really good at what they do, man. You know, we played tons of gigs with Nat Pelican, you know. And, you know, a lot of people said, well, are the Rats pop punk? It's like, no, we're just punk rock, man. It's, you know, we're not a genre. We're just punk rock music. That's all.
Yeah, Matt Pelican. I never saw him. I wasn't here, but I've heard all the music, and they sounded really
good. Yeah, good gigs, man. They played a couple of parties at my house at the Rat's house. Back in the day, we drank a lot of piss together. They liked to drink, so yeah, good guys.
Remember anywhere else north of the river that you played, apart from the Heidi?
I used to play the White Sands. Some of those gigs were fucking great. Yeah, Scarborough. We played at the Swanbourne.
So were you more of a live band, the Rats?
Yeah, absolutely.
You weren't really that bothered about recording? I know you did. You did a fair bit of recording.
I mean, we were only together for 4 years, man. The legacy of the Rats is, you know, a lot longer than the actual input. We only released like 3 7-inches, I think. Yeah, 3 7-inches and 2 CDs. So, yeah, 4 years, yeah, it's all right. But yeah, we're a live band, yeah. You know, we played a lot, live, a lot. Good or bad, a lot of bad.
When it got towards the end of the Rats, then, what happened? And how did it go from the Rats to the Homicides?
The Rats moved to Sydney. You know, Perth bands always move to Melbourne, so we went to Sydney. And that was good. We were there for a couple of years and did really well, and then the band just kind of fizzled apart, you know, reached its... And we got an offer. We were living somewhere over in Sydney, which was really expensive, and I came back over here to help bury a friend, Sheenie from Rupture. And while I was over here for the funeral, I got offered a house for $110 in West Perth and went, fuck it. Came back to Perth. And because, you know, the Rats was over... Homicides just started. I've said before, the Homicides was like being in a band akin to the Bash Street Kids, only with lots of drugs. But it worked for us, man. You know, the fact that we were all mental and the fact that we were all bouncing off each other really worked. We got real popular real quickly. But we were a good band. You know, we were the most fucking out of it people in the room anywhere. We'd still be the best band of the night, you know, or the worst band. Both as entertaining as each other. And I mean, it just happened. The Homicides just happened because, you know, I wasn't in a band anymore and I was sitting around a table with three other mates. And there was a drums and guitar set up. You can do that and you can do that and you can sing. And it's like, fucking, there we go. We got a band. We wrote a couple of songs and off you go.
Was it the same sort of situation as the Rats, or did it feel a bit different in terms of how you played or who you were with?
Yeah, it was different. I mean, every band's different, man. More experienced, yeah. And I wanted a break. You know, I'd been the front man and the main songwriter, well, the only songwriter and everything for the Rats for fucking 4 years, 5 years. And I just wanted to go in the background for a bit, fucking singing half the songs and writing fucking half of them as well anyway. So, you know, it was good, you know. It was a good outlet. I mean, you know, sometimes I look back at the Homicides and go, punters didn't really get it some of the time. But then, you know, I look at it too and say, well, we weren't the fucking Clash, were we? It was good fun and leave it at that.
Can you remember any touring bands from the East Coast or internationally that came over here?
Yeah, I saw the Clash in 82 when I was 13.
At the old, what's it called?
The old Entertainment Centre.
Entertainment Centre.
Yeah. Still the best thing I've ever seen. 82. Still the best thing I've ever seen. Yeah, I'd missed out on a few and I wasn't going to miss that, man. You know, even at 13 I was like, yeah, I'm not missing the Clash. No, I mean, we had Blondie and Joan Jett in the early 80s and Madness and I think Ian Jury. As I said earlier though, man, there's a few years there in the 80s when I was just totally out of it, so I wasn't paying attention to anything. I could have seen some band and not even been aware that I've seen them, you know? You know, like all these CDs and albums and stuff I've got, you know, put any of them on and there's a really good chance I won't be able to name the track, even though I know the song back to front.
Yeah.
But I won't know the name of the song. Because unless I look at the, you know, the track listing, because I don't, you know. Yeah. I haven't read an interview with another band or artist for at least 30 years. No interest in what they do or think, you know. Why would you? I mean, who cares what Pete Townsend thinks in his 300th interview in Mojo magazine? You know
people
what I mean?
Do. People
no,
do.
No, I know. I know, but I don't. And I get it. I get that they do. You know, they admire these people and they, you know, and music is a place of worship, man, you know. So I understand this. Absolutely.
I think that's the thing. Sometimes you like, if you like a band, you automatically think this person's got something to say. And it doesn't always follow that that's the case.
Yeah, but that's you know, that's getting to the places where you're basing your opinion on what someone else has to fucking say. You know, music should open doors, and what they have to say should, like a strummer or you know, or someone like that. You know, it opens doors. You know, that's the thing that opened it for me more than anything with punk was I was already into music. You know. But the Dead Kennedys and Plasmatics and stuff like that told me stuff that I was already fucking aware of, you know, that I already suspected was true, you know. Read between the lines, man, you know. Look behind the curtain because that's where the real truth is, you know. Pay attention. Music opens doors, you know. The words should open doors. You know, like a Phil Lynott Thin Lizzy love song says as much to me as Death or Glory might, you know, by The Clash. You know, they're two different places, but they open the door to your own experience. Isn't that what it's supposed to be about? Same as some band like, you know, DKs or that should... It's education, you know? It's like drugs, you know? Drugs aren't for fucking fun. Drugs are for, you know, perception, man. For going down wormholes. Music should be too. Do you listen to Peer Ubu for a giggle? I mean, come on. By doing that, you'd be basing your political view and your view on society and stuff, wouldn't you? If you're taking what the singer says just by rote. Do I own Gary Glitter Records? Yeah, I do. Do I want to hang out with Gary and listen to his fucking political views? No, I don't. You know what I mean? Everyone's a fraud and everyone's a failure, you know? We can't be straight all the time. Even our heroes.
Things you sing about, write about, they're the things you believe in.
Some songs I've written have been taken in the wrong sense, though. You know, like "Thank You Beer," the Homicide song. You know, people saw that as a, you know, they saw that as a rallying cry. Fuck yeah, fucking Thank You Beer, let's get pissed. It was more on the line of, you know, too drunk to fuck. It was like taking the piss out of it. It was supposed to be ironic. People took it another way, which is that's up to them. You know, what am I? I can't tell them how to think. You know, or how to perceive something. You know, fuck, see, we're going to these questions. How do you write your songs? Oh, for fuck's sake, man. You know, I didn't want to go there. But yeah, I stand by everything I write. And the older I get, and with the band like Sick Pose, I concentrate on getting that across. Fucking pay attention. This is not a fucking joke. Think for yourself, man.
So, Danny, can I go back to the end of the Homicide days? So when they finished, did they sort of self-destruct, or do they just, we've sort of had enough?
I don't know. We kind of self-destructed from the start, man. Yeah, I'm surprised we lasted as long as we did, which was about 8 or 9 years, I think. Yeah. Did we self-destruct? Yeah, a few times we did. Yeah. More than once we self-destructed. Yeah, a few times. But the end of the band was just the end of the band. It was just fucking over, man. I was sick of it. Personally, you know, I don't know about the other guys, but I was fucking sick of it. You know, the last gig we ever played was supporting, you know, one of my heroes, a band I've always wanted to play with, which was X, you know. Always wanted to play with X. But even the honour of doing that, I couldn't even be bothered singing my own songs. You know, I made up words for every song and just farted my way through it because I was over it, man.
Did you need a break from them or just from playing live?
I needed a break from everything after that. All it was rounds of gigs, drinks, drugs and, you know, the rest of it, man. For a lot of years, after the Homicides, there's a lot more drugs and a lot more fucking ring around the rosy. And I did take some time off to, as they say, find who the fuck you are again, you know? Which I'm still in the process of, you know? But we all are, so that's no big thing. Just the dropping of certain habits and certain distractions and obligations left me more open to search for peace of mind opposed to whatever else there is. I'm not even sure. I played some solo gigs for a while. You know, I did that for some reason. I don't even fucking know. You know, probably just to keep my toe in the water. I think I did about 10 solo gigs, you know, over a bit of time. Oh, dude, I was in raw nerve after the homicides. That's right. Fuck, I forgot. What kind of interview are you, man? You skipped over a whole band. You just want to hear the dirt. You just want to hear the shit. Well, I'm not going to go there, man. Don't get me wrong, you know, the drugs and all that. Fucking great time, you know, really good time. I wouldn't recommend the drugs I was taking to anybody, but they're the best shit ever. But that was then, you know. If you don't keep going through chapters, then you're fucking wasting your time, aren't you? You're not paying attention to the life you've been given. Things change. You know, like each band, it's just a different chapter. You know, and each band is very different to the last band. Yeah, Raw Nerve, that's right. I think Raw Nerve only went for about 2 years, but that was good fun, you know, good band. And that was, to get back to your question, that was a band just to relax a bit, you know, after the homicides. Was just, now this is just good fun, you know, this is not four mental people in the same room trying to communicate the walls and unsurprisingly getting nowhere.
Did you do any East Coast?
Yeah, homicides toured, fuck, maybe six times over East, I think, yeah.
Was that Claire Hodgson? Did she arrange some of
that? Yeah, Claire did that. Claire was a great manager. You know, Claire, take no shit, Claire, you know. She was a great manager, especially for the homicides. Like I said, it was like, I've said it before in interviews where poor old Claire, you know, what do? People ask what you do. Oh, I manage the homicides. You may as well say you're a fucking pimp for weirdos, you know, or something equally as degrading. Yeah, she was a great manager. Known Claire for a very long time. But see, even as tough as Claire is, she eventually had enough of the homicides and said, fuck you guys, and did the right thing and fucked off. I wouldn't want to have to look after us. Yeah, fucking great manager.
Was there a difference playing gigs over the East Coast than playing here in front of your mates and fans and crowd? Was it harder?
No, it's easier. Gee, man, what a fucking stupid question. No, it's kind of the same, actually. It's the joy of it, though, and it's not the same, because the joy of it is playing somewhere new or different. Now, that's always great, you know, and winning over a new crowd is always good too, you know. So, yeah, there's joy there, man. You know, playing live to me has always been business. It's not, like I said, it's not fun. You know, I don't do it for fucking fun. It's like business. And I get pleasure out of it, and I get some kind of you know, electric jolt out of it, of course. But it's not for fucking fun, man. But gigs over East, always good, you know, always done really well over there. You know, you're playing to your new set of mates too, I mean, or old mates, you know. Like the Rats had a really good, you know, following over when we were living in Sydney, and we made a lot of really good lifelong friends. We're still friends and brothers and sisters now. And so when the homicides went over there, you know, a few years later, we kind of had an immediate, you know, audience. You know, all old Rats fans came out, and all the friends came out and brought their friends and blah, blah, blah. So the gigs were always fucking great, man. Yeah, never played a dull gig over East. You always like touring, though, you know. Geelong was fucking great. Loved Geelong. Good people, good bands. Always like playing Sydney, you know. Sydney's like, you know, feels like home. I've lived there a couple of times. Miss touring. Haven't toured for a few years. Miss touring.
So what about Sick Pose? Would they tour? Because you've done a few gigs over the years, but not as many as I'd hoped.
Nah. I struggle with that, you know. It's the only thing I struggle with. The band's fucking great, but the other boys, their work commitments and stuff are just really intrusive onto that kind of thing, you know. Two of them run their own business. The other one works like, you know, 6 days a week most of the time. So one of the agreements when we got the band together was I wasn't going to just book gigs, you know, because I just tend to just book fucking gigs. So, yeah, I don't think we've done a gig for shit, man. 2 years? Yeah, probably 2 years. I mean, we're still active. I mean, we're still writing. We still rehearse all the time. And we're still, you know, we've got our recordings in the works for the next release. So, you know, we're still an active band. We just haven't played, haven't bothered, you know.
We are nothing to no one. If you don't
not bother you, but would you
yeah,
like?
It bothers
you'd,
me.
You'd like to do if you'd like to do more.
Yeah,
you'd
I like gigs, man. As I said, gigs. I get a real good buzz and a really good you know, Zen punk when I'm on stage. You know, I can relax, as I said. So I enjoy that aspect. The other guys just aren't into it that much. You know, they're not bothered by it, but too lazy to get another band together to, you know, to just be a gig band or something. You know, no, Sick Pose are an ongoing concern and will be for quite a while, I'd imagine.
Because you released something last year, didn't you? You released a 6-track or something last
year. We had a 6-track CD release last year, and we had an 8-track CD release last year. So two releases last year.
And you got other stuff recorded?
Recording? No, not recorded yet. We're just writing and getting all that sorted out.
I want to ask about anger.
Anger? Anger. In what sense?
Do you think you're an angry man?
I think I'm a calm man. I think I'm very self-controlled, considering what I could be. Depends who you're talking to, Dave. Which one of me you want to talk to. I'm occasionally pissed off. Instead of the word angry, I'd use the word contemptuous, you know? I have a lot of contempt for the ridiculousness I see and experience. Well, not experience so much because I avoid such things, but the world and society as it is will insist itself upon you nowadays. No, I'm not angry, Dave. Do I appear angry to you?
No.
Or aggressive?
No, you don't.
No? No, I'm not. That's why.
You appear to me as being somebody who's who knows who you are.
A work in progress, like all of us, mate.
Well, yeah, everybody is.
Yeah.
Everybody is.
I think that's the point. The older I get, I understand that's the point of what we're doing here, is who the fuck are you? And who are you? Who are you? Well, I think the problem we have communicating with each other is that bullshit, that veil. If we're bullshitting to each other, then what way is that to form a relationship with another human being? If one of us is bullshitting the other one and the other one's just believing it because that's what we do, then fuck that shit. I don't do that shit. Do you know what I mean? And I won't just let it pass. So we can still get along as human beings as long as you drop the bullshit. And if I'm bullshitting you and you're accepting it, then how am I supposed to accept you if you're accepting my bullshit? All you need is a push in the right direction and someone to go, fucking hug me, you know, or listen to me. That's all. That's all any of us ever want. Peace of mind is, there's no price on peace of mind, man. And that involves our interaction and communication with the humans we choose to have in our life. Absolutely. If you're a liability, then there's no chance you will have any more than 5 minutes in my life, you know. That's a really conscious choice I made a very long time ago, you know, through experience and through, you know, good and bad experiences of interacting with the apes. It's a fucking zoo. Well, we finally said something. Because that's why, you know, without sounding hoary or, you know, too precious about things. That's what punk is, man, is, you know, that communication, you know, which you pass on and pass on and pass on. It's not your fucking record collection. It's not your fucking band that you've been in for 5 minutes, you know. It's much bigger than that for some of us. It's an identity, you know. We're all looking for an identity in some way. I found mine a very long time ago. Maybe that I know it's part of what makes me, you know, what you were just talking about. After all I've experienced and all I've heard and all I've read and all I've fucking listened to and all the shit that's happened, and I'm going to be ignorant of that and treat you that way? Do you see what I say? Back to that bullshit? What kind of fucking person would I be, or human being would I be, if after all of that, I haven't learnt a fucking thing? Not one fucking thing. Pass me the fucking dog food. It was the music of the time, though. That's what I try and get across sometimes, is when I said earlier, like, a new Dead Kennedys record or a new Exploited record or a new... It wasn't you were going back and discovering this stuff. This was the music of the time. Yeah. You know, this was our time, our music, you know? That's why it's so important to people of our age now, you know? These poor old middle-aged men trying to really relive the glory days of the fucking 80s.
So, that's the thing.
Neither am I, man. Of course I'm not.
It's like you say about asking questions about going back to the day. Mm. You know, it's like, well, what was the day?
As I said earlier, exactly, as I said earlier, you know, it's like when people say things like, oh, back in the day, man, how was it back in the day? What the fuck do you mean back in the day? I'm still here. I don't have a back in the day. Today's the day. Yeah. You know, this is the day.
I think, but that music to me, that informed what I still believe in now.
No, absolutely.
That's what I picked up on that.
Absolutely.
Space, is where you don't have to, the mainstream media, you don't have to be.
Absolutely.
You know, there is an alternative.
Absolutely.
And nothing's changed.
Oh, it's worse now. It's way worse. Well, it's got worse. Yeah. It's got worse. And the thing is,
here in Australia,
if you want to jump down a hole, it's like because of that exposure that, say, punk and then the underground that followed it, you know, opened a whole, you know, whole swags of generational people's minds open, the 80s generation opened their minds. And then in the 90s, when grunge came along and that kind of stuff, it was co-opted and it was bought and owned by the people who saw what you were talking about and went, let's turn rebellion into a dollar. You know, these people think this way, but we can still sell them the shit. You know, let's sell them a fucking anarchy symbol, an anarchy shirt, because they'll fucking buy it, you know. Yeah. They codified it and commodified it, rebellion into money. And that's what it is now. It's even worse than it was in the 70s and 80s. You know, we got educated. And I don't want to sound like an old man. We knew better back then. Not at all, you know. But everything nowadays is just a parody or a pastiche of what it was once was. Everything is. All modern culture is just a mishmash and a copy of what's already come before it. Everything. There's nothing new. Nothing I see, you know. Nothing I can hear. Like in the 70s and early 80s or, you know, up to most of the 80s, you look at the top 10 and every band sounds fucking really different for the next band. Yeah, they're a pop band or a rock band, but they're all trying to get their own sound together. Yeah. And that's what I meant by the 90s. They went, yeah, let's just fucking wrap it all together and sell it. Yeah. And nothing's changed since. Right. And everything is just a pastiche of what's come before. Why are we still listening to these bands? I mean, fuck Soundgarden. I fucking never listen to Soundgarden. They were crap then. They're one of the worst bands ever. But I still listen to Sweet, man.
Yeah.
You know? So who's to criticise? Sometimes I think it's very rude to criticise other people's musical taste because it's an arbitrary thing that we, you know, that forms early or late or whatever, you know? But music is a journey, you know? You should try out everything. I mean, you look around this room here and there's whole sections of, you know, of different genres and different years. That's all 60s, that's all 70s and 80s and blah, blah, blah. Lots of great music in the 90s, fuck, you know, especially, you know, heaps of great punk in the 90s. Jesus, yeah. Punk was fucking going off in the 90s. I mean, if you're listening to Pearl Jam, I might question you on your motivations and why do you get anything out of that? But otherwise, yeah, it's hard to criticise because we like what we like. Yeah.
You know,
and more than shit, as you said a minute ago, but we've heard it.
Yeah, exactly.
What we've heard it before. What do you? But music's always been like that. Even in our day, you know, like people say, "Well, you like punk," and I go, "Yeah, but punk is this big." But I like this much, you know. Like any genre, I like. Yeah, I love metal, you know. But metal is huge. It's massive. But I only like that much of it, you know. What's being released now? There's tons of great stuff being released. I'm not criticising that. And a lot of it is bland as shit, but there's always been a lot of bland shit around. Again, like I said, I don't like appropriation simply because you're too fucking lazy to make up your own stuff, you know? Or, you know, it's a tribute. No, you're just lazy, you know? Like, I can listen to Diamanda Galas, for instance, and then the next thing I put on could be a Brian Ferry solo album. And there's no jump to me, you know? It's just all music. There's no, like, big genre jump. Or then after that, put on Discharge, you know? And there's no tangible difference to me. It's all just music.
Thanks again to Donny Rat for joining me on Punk West. On this episode, you heard tracks by The Rats, The Homicides and Sick Pose. I'm David Reddin and I produced and edited this podcast. You can find other episodes of Punk West at rtrfm.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. To get your fix of punk music, listen to Burn the Airwaves every Thursday night on RTRFM 92.1 between the hours of 9 and 11.